Mr. Clarkson, reel 2.
And I used to do a week in the blacksmith shop, a week in the wheelwright shop, and a week in the paint shop. Well, he used to buy all this old iron, he used to shoe horses, make traps and that sort of thing. And they had a special sledge for me, because I wasn't very big. And all this iron that we used to make shoes of was second-hand stuff that he'd bought, and you had to cut it down into strips. And then they used to fashion the shoes, anything from ponies up to hunters and great big farm horses. And I used to work from 6 in the morning and overtime till 10 o'clock at night. And I used to get 3 halfpence an hour overtime. And I'd been promoted then to taking shoes off. And you can imagine me, little fellow that I was then, pulling those shoes off a great big farm horse and shooting his back legs out. I'd be going all over the place. Anyway, we'd work on this shoeing business up till late at night, and then I lived a mile that way, and we'd have 2 horses that lived a mile that way in a Druitt's farm. And you say, well, George, you can take these on your way home. And so they used to hoist me on top of one horse, have my legs spread out like that, and lead in the other one. And then I had to walk up to this farm up Ash Green, across the fields, tie them up in their stables, all that sort of thing.
This was after working overtime, perhaps?
This was overtime, yes. And then, I'll tell you about a funny experience I had there. My ambition was always to ride a horse with a saddle on it. And there was one from this Druitt's farm, where they call it a hack. They use it for hunting. And one day that came in to be shod, and it had the saddle, the stirrups, and all the lot on it. And you can imagine my delight when they said, well, you can take this one back, George. And they hoisted me up on the back of this horse, and off I went down the village street, just about the time that all my friends were coming out of the school. And there was me proudly trotting along on this horse, when all of a sudden round the corner came a Foden lorry, you know, brewer's lorry, one of those steam things. This horse, it stood on his front legs and then his hind legs, and then went off at a gallop towards Ash Green. Of course, I was frightened to death. It had a bit between his teeth, all right. And as it got near the hedge, I threw myself off. But that was, by the way, I... Also, up in this little wheelwright shop, he had a lathe there, and you know the stock wheels, there's a stock and there's box, you know, all that paraphernalia. Well, these stocks for these farm cars were huge oak, and the lathe was a hand one, so we only stood about 3 feet apart. And I turned this great big wheel while he was turning using the lathe. And I always remember I always used to be breathless. And he was digging the gouge in there. And so he said one day, well, look, you can take some of the rough off. Handed me the gouge, and I had to go. And I was remembering, I had a boil on my throat here, and that was just on a level with these bits of oak that were flying out like cannonballs hitting me there. Anyhow, to cut a long story short, he went bankrupt. Oh, also, once a week we used to castrate pigs.
Oh, gosh.
And
that was his job, was it? That's one of the jobs he did, was it?
Hmm?
That was one of the jobs that he did for farmers.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, he was a very versatile bloke. There's no doubt about that. Anyhow, he went bankrupt, and his wife, she was a real ladylike woman, a nice person. I always remember it was Christmas time. She said, I'm sorry, I can't buy you a Christmas present, George. They were right down and out. And so I left. I left at... I left in the morning. And in the evening, two brothers, builders, that were in the village, they came round to see my father. They'd passed this blacksmith shop every day, and I suppose they'd seen me slaving there. And they called that night and asked my father if I could go with them and they would make a joiner of me. And so I went with them and I remained with them till we were hanging some gates in a millionaire's house at Ash Green, and somebody came along and said, the Pathfinder's been sunk. And that decided me. I went away to join the Navy.
When you just think about it now, I mean, you had your chance to go on at school.
Yes.
Stopped for you. Did you think, what was your feeling at the time when this came up? What did you feel at the time?
I felt very bitter towards my father and my stepmother. In later years, this came up again when my son, who's now, he's left the university, and he was at Peter Simmons School, the grammar school here. And when he left there, he had the necessary 10 O levels. He had 3 good A levels, and I wanted him to go to university.
Can I just go to university? You wanted him?
Yes. And he wanted to go to the art school. And I said, look, I can see you finishing up as a poor old painter with nothing at all in a few years' time. And I said, now, when I was young, I had a scholarship. I had a chance of a scholarship to go to Farnham Grammar School, and I wasn't allowed to go. My father stopped me. I never forgave my father. And my son said, and if you don't let me go to the art school, I'll never forgive you. Well, I think the fact that there was a war on, that was one. Another thing was that the Navy was always held in, by everybody's estimation, I always felt a certain respect from the Navy where they didn't for the Army. And living where we did in Aldershot, you rarely found a boy joining the Army. They'd seen too much of it. But they're all little heroes that went in the Navy. And when, I can always remember when my brother joined the Navy, and he'd had a couple of pints. He was coming home on leave. He was on a little destroyer, the Waveney. And at that time, he was a stoker. And having done a watch in the stoker, he used to come up and have to do a watch on a gun night. And in those winter times, the end of 14, that would be, practically. And I saw him coming along from the station, coming home on leave. They'd been into Immingham to clean boilers or something, and he came home and you could still see the dark rings of coal dust round his eyes, and he'd had a few pints on the way, and he was tired and sleepy. And as we came down from the station, he staggered a bit, and I remember some women there saying, oh, poor Jack. Poor Jack, if that had been a soldier, he would have been a drunken slut. The Navy was much more appreciated in military circles down there than the Army.
And also in people like yourself who knew the Army, but you also saw the Navy as being a different, a better class of thing?
Yes.
Basically?
Yes. Better? Because anybody could join the Army, but to join the Navy then, even in wartime, you had to have a reference from the local clergyman, from the sergeant of police, and it's a well-known fact that there was no criminals in the Navy then.
And can you describe your own, when you joined, actually, what the procedures were, in fact? You say you had to get references. What, in fact, was the procedure that you remember for the Navy? How were you recruited for the Navy?
There was a recruiting sergeant, a colour sergeant of Marines at Farnborough, That was our nearest place. And that was where I went to join. Now, I haven't told him you wanted to join the Navy and what particular branch you wanted to go in. All that was taken down. And then you were given a few sums to do, a bit of dictation and so on. And then the colour sergeant was pleased to let you know that there was one vacancy left in the Royal Navy. You were lucky to get it. But, and that was when he found out that my age was 2 years younger than I was telling him it was. When he turned back the pages of the book and said, "You're 16 and 4 months," and I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "How comes it that your brother is only 16 and 4 months?" Isn't it? A month difference, anyhow. He said, "You can't be twins." And he said, "What? How old are you actually?" And I told him, and then he said, "Well, you look 18, and you appear to have the necessary papers." I was joining as a carpenter's crew, and of course I had 4 years' papers from the age of 12. And then I was sent home and told that I would hear from them. The following Monday, I had to report to Southampton, to the station at Aldershot, where I met a party, Stoke people joining us, stokers, seamen, cooks and all sorts, about 19 of us. And down to Southampton we went.
Now, why did you put on the 2 years? Because you could join the Navy at 16 if you wanted to, but you would join as a boy then. Why didn't you want to join as a boy?
Ah, because my brother had been in the Navy then several months, and we knew a lot of boys who had joined the Navy, and they'd been to the Impregnable on sixpence a week as second-class boys, a shilling a week as first-class boys. They used to get the rope's end if they didn't behave themselves. They didn't have much leaf, and it seemed to be a long, long time before they were likely to be, you know, on the men's stage. And my brother, when I said, "I want to join the Navy, I'm going to join the Navy," he said, "Don't be a fool." He said, "If you join as a boy," he said, "they'll break your spirit." It was a real hardship for a boy then. So he said, "Leave it till you're 18, he said, "and then join as a tradesman." And I couldn't wait till I was 18, but I thought, "I'll take a chance." And I said to my boss, "I'm going to join as a tradesman." And he said, "Have you any idea what sort of a trade test you'll get?" And I said, "No." And the funny thing, he said, "Can you set out a sash? Can you set out a pair of sashes?" And I said, "I think so." He said, "Well, let's make sure." And the funny thing, that was a test job I got when I was there. Really? Yeah, in the doctor.
That's a joiner's job, setting out a pair of sashes.
Yes.
What do you mean is that? It's a window sash, you mean?
Yes, window sash. Now, they gave you, you're going to the dockyard, mm-hmm. I had a leading seaman to escort me in there, and the trade test was to make this sash. You just had the wood, 9 by 1.5 stuff, an 1.5 would be the thickness of the sash. You had the tools, all hand tools, no machinery. You had to cut that down. You had to mould the bars and the stiles. And that sash had to have 2 bars in it. And you were allowed 6 hours to do that in. And you didn't have to glue it, so that the foreman could take it apart. She was like, and then having done that, you were taken down below in the office and asked a load of questions. I don't think the average joiner would be able to answer half of them these days, about mouldings, the names of all different mouldings and joints and that sort of thing. And then following that, the paper was sent back to the depot to say that you passed, and you were a carpenter's crew then.
And if you had failed that test, would you have had to stay in the Navy as an ordinary something else? Or would you
had the option. But they couldn't keep you.
They couldn't keep you if you didn't want to stay at what you had selected.
No.
And anybody who wanted to join the Navy who knew what you wanted could, you know, you said you went with a party of stalkers one time, so and so. Anybody who joined could get, if he said he wanted to be a stalker or to be a gunner, he would get that, would he?
Oh, yes.